I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Michael Crow. He's president of Arizona State University, and he will be giving a talk titled New Problems, New Partnerships, What Tomorrow's University Needs to Be. And that's happening tomorrow, Wednesday, the 31st of July at 7:30 at the James A. Little Theater here in Santa Fe, sponsored by the Santa Fe Institute. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
So universities, whether public or private universities, tend to be traditional institutions. And in some ways, there's a lot to be said for tradition in education. But in other ways, there can be a slowness to adapt to social and economic and demographic changes. When you got to Arizona State University about a decade ago, what did you find, both in strengths and needs for change? And what did you do?
Well, what I found at ASU was an institution that was still movable, still adjustable, very much committed to its democratic purposes, and still committed to the ideal of actually serving the public. And given those conditions, what we've been doing here is we've been advancing a model of what we call the New American University. And what we mean by that, a university which is not going to go down, a public university that's not going to go down the path of attempting to achieve some sort of status outcome through exclusion. On the contrary, our approach is to build, in a sense, the reputation of the university around the notion of inclusion and around the notion of what our students that we include can achieve. And that's just a completely differentiated approach. And here at ASU, everyone was open to that idea.
What do you mean by status outcome through exclusion? What does that mean?
So in private universities, they can set whatever admission standards they want to set, but at many public universities around the country, it's now become desirous to emulate a private university, and you do that by attempting to build up the status of the institution by having as many people apply as possible and refusing admission to as many as possible, and so therefore you are an exclusive institution, and therefore if you're an exclusive institution, you somehow must be a better institution, which isn't necessarily the case, and we're trying to avoid that.
And so how do you go about doing that?
You avoid that by being committed to the notion of an egalitarian meritocracy. And what I mean by that is the great public universities of the 1950s that were research-oriented, like UC Berkeley and schools like that, they admitted students that had 3.0 grade points. They admitted students that took the hard courses in high school, and they admitted students to a university with no tuition. So this was an institution where if you worked hard and took the hard courses in high school, you'd be admitted to a great research university. Well, today, public universities have departed from that path, and we need to get back on that path. We need to be committed to finding talent in every family at every income level. We need to be committed to solving our problems of society and being of maximum benefit to society. We need to be held accountable for what we do. We need to lower our costs. We need to be more adaptable. All those things require the university to be something other than rigid and traditional.
One of the things that many states have to deal with, and New Mexico is certainly one of them, and I'm not so sure exactly about Arizona, but I mean, we have substandard public education. And so when you've got public education systems, elementary school through high school, that aren't preparing people to write coherent essays, for example, or to have basic math or grammar, things like that. What is the university's role?
So our role is several fold. So we admit students here at ASU that are qualified to do university level work. But having said that, they come from so many different backgrounds and so many different levels of socioeconomic status that what we've had to do is to improve how we teach, to enhance how we teach, to enhance our teaching with technology. We've had to find new ways to do things, and then so that's relative to our university students. And then relative to K through 12 students, we've had to go in and take some responsibility for the underperformance that you're talking about. And so that has meant re-engineering our entire education college, re-engineering how we select people that might become teachers, re-engineering how we train and educate these potential teachers, rethinking everything. And so what you say is correct, that you know, we'd like to have higher performance in K through 12. I think given that, we'd like to have higher performance from our universities, holding ourselves accountable for the underperformance of K through 12. At ASU, we decided that we were partly responsible, so therefore we ought to put the mirror on our own institution and look at how we might improve.
When you talk about a university being a real force in society and not just being a kind of island, but rather really responsive to and responsible to society, what are some of the ways in which you do that? In other words, do you look, for example, at the job market that's out there, that the needs that are out there in society for graduates in certain areas, or what does that look like?
Well, we look at those things, but it's not a good idea to focus too much on those things because the rate of change is too fast. And so what we focus on is how can we produce people capable of being master learners? They're able to learn something new. So we're teaching people how to learn. And we're, you know, sometimes teaching them how to learn in technical areas, but nonetheless, we're still teaching them how to learn because their most important skill going forward is learning and adaptation. How do we do that? We do that by re-engineering how we make the university work and how we carry out what our tasks of teaching, learning, and discovery, and how we take, you know, some additional responsibility for our community is to not just produce the master learners, but in the production of the master learners, make certain that we're working as we work on problems that are meaningfully important to the public in a measurable and demonstrable kind of way. And so that's sort of the way that we've re-engineered our academic culture.
When you talk about changing cultures, and this goes back to the question about tradition, I mean, cultures don't change easily. Have you had to deal with pushback from faculty or from other parts of the university system?
Well, there's always pushback. I have pushback from my children. I have pushback from my wife. The only person that doesn't push back is me on myself, and even that might happen. But within the university, you know, there's certainly pushback. But we've been at this. I've been here for 11 years, and so we've made a lot of progress, and there's a lot of people engaged. I think that what we needed to do was to take the argument away from change for the sake of change, and what we really focused on was the mission of the university and getting our mission well understood. Why are we here? What are we doing? What are we trying to achieve? And what we're trying to achieve is we're trying to be of the greatest service that we can to our students and their families. We're trying to, and once you get moving in that direction, you start thinking about things in a different way, and the institution becomes a little less faculty-centric and a little more student-centric. And for the most part, we've been able to get the culture to move in that direction. That's been a fantastic achievement of our staff and of our faculty here.
One debate that often comes up when people talk about education is whether people, especially in, it happens in younger grades and probably through college as well, whether there should be learning, basically facts, rote learning, and so on, or whether they should focus on creative thought and analytical reasoning and things like that. Analytical reasoning being probably central to creating lifelong learners. How do you bring that into classrooms? How do you get teachers to go in that direction?
So what we do is we encourage among our faculty and facilitate through support services maximum innovation in their pedagogy so that they can carry out both fact-based learning and problem-oriented or conceptual-oriented learning, because both are actually necessary. You can produce a master learner, but if the master learner doesn't actually know anything, then there's a harder time knowing how to adapt or to adapt from to what. And so for us, we work on both of those pathways through stimulating innovation and change and making innovation and change as much a part of our faculty's life as we possibly can, and we've been successful at that.
You talked about the fact that society is changing so fast that you can't really tailor the university towards society's ever-changing needs, and yet there are some things that are just realities, such as climate change and a rapidly changing environment and environmental degradation and so on. How is your university, Arizona State, addressing that?
By changing our in a sense, our intellectual design. So we started the country's first school of sustainability. We built a global institute of sustainability. We built a sustainability program in our W.P. Carey School of Business. We've built programs integrating those kinds of things around all of our colleges. And so we do that by basically saying that if the university stays static, it will fail. If it becomes innovative and adaptive and responsive to things like sustainability or climate change, then we'll have a better chance of producing the right mix of master learners. And so for us, the approach to our problems has been to do anything other than just operate the university like a store. It's been to move the university forward by conceptually designing an adaptive institution.
This sounds like a link to the Santa Fe Institute, and that was one of the things I was going to ask you. I mean, you're speaking in a lecture sponsored by the Santa Fe Institute. How does your work intersect with theirs?
Well, they're interested in issues related to the scientific complexity issue. They're interested in social complexity. They're interested in big questions. They're interested in systems and understanding things at a systems level. They're interested in how do you take reductionistic understanding of nature and then apply that to actually understanding how people and nature interface. And so in all of that, the universities are knowledge enterprises engaged in teaching, learning, and discovery across all of those things. But we're also an institution in society that is actually operating in the midst of all of this complexity and, in fact, contributing to the complexity. So in that, the Santa Fe Institute is interested in, you know, where are we headed with this university and how might it change, since they're a leading, in a sense, a thought-leading institution about big ideas for the future and big conceptualizations for the future. Well, let's look at where our universities are headed for the future.
We're talking to Michael Crow, president of Arizona State University. You are in Arizona, which is a culturally mixed state. Above all, I mean, similar to New Mexico in many ways, so-called Anglo and Hispanic students, Mexican students, immigrants, and so on. You talked earlier about going and finding talented students from all socioeconomic levels. First of all, how do you do that, and how do you deal with the kind of cultural integration that's necessary on a culturally mixed campus?
So, I mean, the first thing that if one wants to have a public university and have it truly be public in a sense, it's got to find talent at every family income level, because talent is evenly distributed throughout our society. It's not a function of a parent's income or a family income. The way that we go after talent is we pursue it. That is, it's a conscious thing on our part. We go to high schools, we recruit at high schools, we go into communities, we have community engagement activities, we have community support activities, and what we're pushing is we're pushing ways in which talent can find its way to the university. Then upon arrival at the university, you know, we basically operate on as open system and approach as we possibly can, where we're looking for our central purpose here is not to create an institution which is made up of this subgroup or this ethnic group or that ethnic group, but the entire institution is accessible to everyone. And so we just operate on a highly open system, interactive kind of mode, and it's working. And so it's a very complex thing, as your question implies, but it is working, and it's working because we have made it a desired end purpose to work, and we measure our success on whether or not we actually have a student body which is representative of the entire socioeconomic distribution of the state, which ours is. And we would consider ourselves to be underperforming if we weren't delivering our educational opportunity to that diversity of students.
A lot of the time there is a kind of implied or overtly stated kind of, what would you call it, antagonism between democracy and elitism. And I find that disturbing sometimes, because you want to have an elite education in the very best sense of the word elite, meaning excellence and highly disciplined and so on, and you also want that to be available to everybody. So it seems like that's one of those contradictions that really kind of needs to be dismantled.
Well, that's exactly where the confusion has come in the way that higher education has evolved the last few decades. I used to be a faculty member and one of the provosts at Columbia University in New York City, which had an elite faculty and an elite academic institution, but they considered themselves to be more elite also because they had highly exclusive admission requirements. That's fine for a private university, and it's a fantastic university, and it's doing great things. My own view is that that's not a path for public universities, certainly not a path for most public universities, meaning some institution has got to take on the task of having an elite faculty and elite in quality academic programs. That is, they're, you know, as good as the learning environment that can be created anywhere else, but they are available across all families and at scale. And it's the scale making it work, which has forced some public universities to sort of pull up their ladder or pull up their drawbridge and say, oh, well, no, we're not going to admit any kids that have, you know, that are outside of the top 5% of the high school class. Well, then what about the other students who are fully prepared to do university-level work? Where might they go? Well, someone will say, well, they need to go to a school that doesn't have all these things. And I'm sort of the view, well, who made that so? So why don't we try to tackle that? So we're very much committed to the notion of access and excellence, what we call accessibility and excellence, being wrapped up, deeply wrapped up and intertwined in a single institution. And that's what we're trying to and are demonstrating as what we think is the model of what a new kind of public university is supposed to be.
You are working in a context which is, for example, the upward mobility of wealth and the, as it's been framed, the 99% and the 1%, the ever-rising cost of student loans, which when I was in college were ridiculously, I mean, wonderfully inexpensive, and my student loan was practically nothing when I graduated from a private university. And you also have a context of a kind of anti-intellectualism, and above all, a non-funding of public education at every level, to the point where, I mean, in the elementary schools, teachers are buying art supplies and PE classes are canceled and so on. How, I mean, at the university level, first of all, what does that context look like nationally, and how are you dealing with it?
Well, first, all those things you say are, of course, true, and they are representative of us sort of losing our way a little bit, you know, where we haven't figured out exactly how we're going to deal with intergenerational investment. How does the present generation invest best in the next generation so that all that we have become as the United States might be maintained and enhanced and improved? Having said that, we basically believe that at ASU, and I believe personally, that what we've got to do is to try to do everything we can to enhance our accessibility, enhance our quality, find ways to lower our cost, find ways to adjust to the state's investment decisions. We can't just throw our hands up and spend 10 years complaining about the money that we wish that we had. We need to figure out how to make it work in spite of whatever we might face. So our job here at the university is not just to say to people, oh, you need to fund us, you need to fund us. It's to say, yes, we'd like your investment, but, you know, and then at the same time advance the institution. So we're very much of the sort of activism and success through innovation approach. And we think that in the long run, that will lead to additional public investment because we'll be demonstrating how the institution can be successful. Now, the one thing that's been particularly acute in the last couple of years since the Great Recession has been the very rapid transference of cost to families through increased tuition. We've experienced some of that here, but we've worked to mitigate it through various very substantial investments in financial aid. But nonetheless, it is something that has to be repaired. So right now, we're working on how to lower our cost by introducing technologies that, on the one hand, improve our efficiency and our effectiveness, but also enhance our learning outcomes. And those are very difficult to find, and they're not simple things like just, oh, let's just put a MOOC on the schedule and let's do this or that. It's not that at all. And so we've decided to sort of work towards these objectives. And in working towards these objectives, it helps us to be more innovative.
How do you actually do it? Like, what are you talking about specifically?
Well, so we have relationships with 40 technology companies that are helping us to build learning platforms that allow us to teach better and to teach more intensely and to teach more individually and to have more individualized, what we call adaptive learning platforms. These adaptive learning platforms allow us in certain courses to have a substantially lower cost to produce that particular course, particularly large courses like math and things like that. And then when we do that, that then allows us to have financial savings that keeps us from driving our costs up. And so re-engineering the structure of the university to lower our academic administrative costs, we've done a lot of that. Reconceptualizing other things that we do, launching our ASU online enterprise, both to serve the public and to generate new revenue for the institution. So we've been doing all of these things and a much longer list than that, all so that we can find a way to make it work, regardless of the circumstances we find ourselves in. You just can't be a victim of circumstances, whatever they are. Certainly, it is not wise for people to minimally invest in public education. But if they choose to minimally invest in public education, it doesn't mean that you just stop innovating until they do invest. You have to figure out how to make it work.
Michael Crow is president of Arizona State University, and once again, he will be giving a talk titled New Problems, New Partnerships, What Tomorrow's University Needs to Be. That's happening tomorrow, Wednesday, the 31st of July at 7:30 in the evening at the James A. Little Theater. It's free and open to the public, sponsored by the Santa Fe Institute. Thanks so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Okay, thanks a lot, and maybe we'll see you over there.
Excellent.